The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning, dude. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, the DK Network. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada at the D. Downtown Las Vegas. Football, 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 Kelly.
Yeah, let's go.
Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Producer number nine. So much more than a producer. Let me just start with a grievance. I gave the Christmas gifts to everybody, and I find out that they're not betting futures. They're just betting with it. Random events. This is already.
We're talking about one. I'm sorry. I gave the okay.
Breaking of the rules already. It's already a violation. Oh, you try to do something good. Oh, anyway, on the show today, Matt Brown will talk football with us. We usually, I usually start the show, Kelly, by rhapsodizing about something in the first segment, by waxing poetically, some would say. Not today. Dr. Bob is on father duty this morning, so he's going to join us from the outset. The great Dr. Bob Stoll, who's kind enough to do a little 5 minutes with us or 10 minutes with us before he takes the kids to where he needs to take them. We'll do that. Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke. Chris Felica will join us to talk NFL Wildcard Weekend, the host of the Bear Bets Pod, both football versions, college and pro. And we'll talk Australian Open, what he's betting in the Australian Open as well. This is the greatest, I'm telling you, man, Wildcard Weekend and the beginning of the Australian Open.
It's awesome.
And after this show, Drew Dinsick and I will do a deep dive, if you will, see what I did, into the Australian Open, where we'll just go player by player. We'll talk about the draw, post-draw sort of podcast on this, who that helps, who that hinders, where his bets lie. We'll get into that a little later on with Drew on the Megapod, but we'll do it with Chris Felica here as well. I added a bet. Kelly, I did take a flyer on Iga not to drop a set, even with her bad draw, not to drop a set, 18-1.
Ooh, okay.
So we shall see.
Like it.
We shall see. No quarters in town, by the way.
That's so brutal, man.
Come that, on.
Okay, is that one you struggle to find always,
They had gotten that last year, finally, with the new Caesars app, and then as of last night, I didn't see anything.
But even last year, that was the only app in town that had it.
Pretty much.
Or only place
in
town.
As I can recall. Yeah, pretty much.
It is brutal.
MGM has it outside of Nevada, but not in Nevada kind of thing. Anyway, so before we get to Bob here, one note, of course, in case you missed it this morning, one of the seven NFL head coaching vacancies has been filled. We mentioned Gerard Mayo earlier in the week as a likely possibility to replace Bill Belichick. Here's what we did not know. It was written in his contract. Those things are not on file with the league office, or at least not made public, I should say. They're filed with the league office, but not made public. So Gerard Mayo was going to be the Patriots' successor to Bill Belichick. We were speculating. We didn't know that it was going to be factual. He is. Played with the Patriots from 2008 to 2015, was named team captain in his second year, won a Super Bowl with the Patriots, and now becomes, Kelly, the youngest coach in the National Football League at the age of 37, 1 month younger than Sean McVay, who for the first time in his Rams coaching life gets to say he is no longer the youngest coach in the NFL.
Feels like McVay's been there forever now, too.
Wow. I think he was 32 when he got hired. Don't hold me to that. But I believe he was 32. So both of these guys are 37, but Mayo a month younger. So Gerard Mayo, the new head coach of the New England Patriots, which leaves seven vacancies still to be filled. And of course, Jim Harbaugh still out there. Dr. Bob joins us now, ladies and gentlemen, the great Bob Stoll at Dr. Bob Sports on Twitter, drbobsports.com, pioneer in using predictive algorithms to give us the outcomes of sporting events. He joins us now. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing all right. Up bright and early.
What are the fatherly duties that you have to perform this morning before we let you go?
Yeah, I have to run my kid to school. My wife had a previous engagement this morning, so I am hustling the kids out to school this morning.
All right, submitting ballot to Father of the Year candidacy, Father of the Year award right now. Well done. Okay, Wild Card Weekend, Super Wild Card Weekend. You have a bet that you like above all. What do you like?
Well, sort of surprising. It's going to be super cold in Kansas City on Saturday night. Zero temperatures around zero, 14, 15 mile an hour winds somewhere in there with some gusts. And because of that, the total has been beaten down. The wind is a factor. I mean, 14, 15 mile an hour winds is certainly a factor, and that's in the model. But people get overexcited about, oh, it's going to be super cold and the temperature's near zero. There's never been a study that shows temperature has anything to do with scoring. It's just wind, precipitation, and surface type, aside from the players and everything else. But outside forces, temperature does not have anything to do. In fact, there's studies that show that really hot games are more lower scoring than really, you know, cold games. So I think the line is lower than it should be because of that. And there are tons of other factors. And how long do you have? Because here's a list.
We got time.
First of all, Jalen Waddle's going to be back for the Dolphins. That makes a big difference. The last 2 weeks when Waddle was out, Tua Tagovailoa averaged just 5.8 yards per pass play compared to 7.5 yards per pass play in the 14 games he's had Waddle and Tyreek Hill on the field. That makes a difference. He should also have time to throw. They've had some injuries on the offensive line. Pro Bowl left tackle Terron Armstead's been out for 6 games. Starting right guard Robert Hunt has missed 6 games, including the last 4 games. That's a big difference. Having Hunt is huge. I mean, having Armstead obviously is great since he doesn't give up a lot of pressures on the outside. But Hunt is huge because the Chiefs have Chris Jones, who led the league interior lineman in pressure rate. Well, Hunt's only conceded 5 pressures in 314 pass blocking snaps. His backup, who's played for, you know, has played basically half the season, has given up 20 pressures, 4 times as many, in about the same amount of pass blocking snaps. So having Hunt back to help contain Chris Jones certainly helps. Kansas City does have a little bit of an outside rush with Karlaftis, who ranks 17th in pressures on the outside. But he's up against right tackle Austin Jackson, who's 3rd in the league in pass blocking efficiency. So I don't think Kansas City is going to get the pass rush. And Tua will have more time than he's had in recent weeks with 2 of his offensive linemen out. But I think that's going to certainly uplift the Miami pass attack, which has been a little, you know, a little bit down recently compared to earlier in the season. And I think that the pass attack in general is going to work well despite the wind. And they can also run the ball. They're 5th in the league in rush success rate. Kansas City's defense is 28th in the league in expected points added per run on defense. So if they are not having great success throwing it, they can still run the ball. So I think there's going to be offense for Miami. And on the other side of the ball, Dolphins stopped the run really well. The top in the league in the advanced metrics against the run. I don't think the Chiefs are going to force the run against a really good run defense. That means Patrick Mahomes is going to be throwing the ball, which is great. He should have some time to find his receivers. Kansas City's interior offensive line are responsible for only 34% of the pressures against Mahomes this year, which is 2nd fewest in the league. And they'll be up against a couple pretty good interior defenders in Zeiler and Kristen Wilkins, who are 16th and 17th in pass rushing efficiency. But Kansas City's offensive line is better than those two guys. So I don't think they're going to get a lot on the inside, which is a problem because the Dolphins don't have any edge rushers. Phillips, Chubb, then Ginkle, and Good, they're all out. So 4 edge rushers are out for the Dolphins that combined for 87% of their edge defender pressures this year. And those 4 guys combined are worth about 2 points to the total. So I think both quarterbacks will have time to throw. And then you get, you know, Travis Kelce should have a good game. He's got a good matchup here. The Dolphins are, you know, giving up a 57% success rate to tight ends, which is 26th in the league. So Kelce has been slumping a little bit lately. That's a lot of that has to do with matchups. I think he'll have no problems against Miami. And Xavier Howard's out for the Dolphins, their best cornerback. He's worth a couple points. He gives up 2.0 yards per target less than his backup, Eli Apple. So that's huge. So I think there's a lot of things that really favor the over. The total is lower than it should be because of the cold. And I don't think the cold has anything to do with it. You know, there should be lower scoring because of the wind, but they're adding a little bit more to it because it's also going to be cold, which I don't think matters. So I see a lot of value on the over. I predict 48 points in the game, and it's 43.5 right now.
And that is why we have you on, Bob, because we haven't had a deep dive into the offensive line play on either side. We haven't mentioned Robert Hunt or Austin Jackson on the Dolphins side specifically. That is why we have you on for that kind of insight. And so for the other, you know, the big narrative of this game, right, if you listen to most is, oh, well, they're from Miami. They're from Miami. It's going to be so cold for them. I was trying to make the point yesterday that when it gets to a certain temperature, it's cold for everybody. How much do you buy in at all to that kind of narrative?
A little bit. I mean, there has been some studies done that cold, you know, warm weather teams or dome teams don't travel as well in cold weather, especially in the playoffs. There's been something to that. Not enough for me to really factor it in on the side. Like you said, it's cold for both teams, and it's the playoffs. So
yeah.
I think Miami's offense will be fine.
All right, 45 seconds. Is there anything else, side or total, that you like as much as that or enough to mention anyway?
No, there's really not. There's going to be some player props that I'm going to dig into that, you know, and those have done really well over the years in the playoffs. I'll dig into some player props, but nothing else really stands out
okay.
this week. There's a lot of games that are really kind of like, yeah.
All right. That's what we need to hear. Over on the Dolphins and the Chiefs right now, that total consensus at 43. Bob, go take care of the kids. We appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
The great Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob Sports on Twitter, drbobsports.com. Bob Stoll, if you're scoring at home. Stoll. Great dude, too. So that's his play. Over 43, Dolphins, Chiefs, where, again, temperature's supposed to be super-duper cold, single digits at most. Not quite as windy as it will be in Buffalo, where wind's now a little bit tampered down. Mm. No one's mentioning 50 miles per hour anymore, but up to about 30 miles per hour in terms of the gusts and beyond in Buffalo, which we'll get into.
That total keeps ticking down, though. That is, it's 35. There's 34 and a half I'm looking at right in front of me. So, yeah, Buffalo, that total keeps going down.
All right. Matt Brown joins us, the host of All Angles podcast and, of course, The Handle here at VSiN on weekends. We'll talk to him game by game, all six, super wild card weekend, nothing but football and tennis on a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With Omaha Steaks, you'll fall in love at first bite with their tender steaks, juicy burgers, air-chilled chicken, and more. Oh, more's good, too. Mm-hmm. You're going to love every bite. It's Omaha Steaks guarantee. And for a limited time, when you go to omahasteaks.com/VSIN, you'll get 4 free air-chilled boneless chicken breasts and 4 free rich, juicy, boneless pork chops with your order. Oh, minimum purchase may apply.
50% off and $30 off? Man, that's a steal right there. Stealing steaks.
Which mathematical thing do you do first? That would also alter things.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't be deep diving into that, but yeah, you're right. That would matter.
It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Matt Brown joins us once again from a floating handle, which we don't know exactly when it's on. A floating handle.
It will be on at some point on Saturday and Sunday.
That's right.
So you just got to listen all day long. You just got to tune in all day.
All angles, which the clock is ticking right on. There.
Listen all day long.
There it is.
That's the tip. Just listen all day long until you hit the handle and then stay listening once you hear it. Okay, so the next two games, talking about Saturday night now, is the Dolphins at the Chiefs. We're just talking to Dr. Bob about how cold it's going to be there. We had Kevin Roth on from Roto Grinders, your buddy also, yesterday. It's going to be freezing. Bob likes the over here. And then Sunday morning's first game is the wind game between the Bills and the Steelers, where the Bills are 10-point favorites. I have noticed, sir, that you have steered clear of both. Is that correct?
I have.
Is that because of you? You just don't want to deal with it?
So I originally put on Sunday night a Dolphins +3.5 in my account with the caveat that I said on is like, this is injury report dependent, and depending on how this all breaks, I might buy off of this. Well, shortly after that, I mean, like 3 hours after the lines open, towards the end of our show, whenever they say, "Oh, by the way, we're going to be down 3 defensive starters already," like they knew that those guys were already donezo. And then you go in, and now we get this injury report that came through, not great again for the Dolphins, in which we're looking at Xavien Howard being out for them, and then you also have pretty key guys that are questionable in there. You know, Javon Holland is questionable, Raheem Mostert is questionable, Jalen Waddle is questionable. It was just too much for me to try and handicap as to what this offense is going to look like at all against a Chiefs team that, let's be fair, has not looked good all season long. And 4.5 still seems like a big number, but
yeah, that was my whole handicap on Monday, because I did take the Dolphins +3.5, and I get it. I got the worst of it because it's 4.5 now. But that's my thing. It's sort of like, and I feel like, and I know I'm not, but I feel like I was telling Kelly this way, where it's like I feel like I'm the only human being on the Dolphins in this. But it just that's the inconvenient detail right there, right? Which is, have y'all watched the Kansas City Chiefs play this year? Like, what is there?
Then you go and you, like, break up the season. And so, listen, season-long stats can be misleading, certainly heading into the playoffs, right? Like, do we want to know what did they really play, like, the second half of the season, then what did they play, like, kind of those 4 or 5 weeks leading into the playoffs?
Right.
And the reason I say 4 or 5 weeks is because, like, some teams didn't play anybody in week 18, so you kind of have to flop that off of there. And you look at the Chiefs, and as amazing as that defense was the first half of the season, in which we were sitting there talking historically good and blah, 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 blah. They're like middle of the pack over the second half. And that's not bad. They're not bad, but it's not this like, oh, it's the number one defense in the NFL. Oh, it's they're setting all these records. They're literally like 15th, 16th, 17th in several different categories over the second half of the season. So it is not this lockdown, crazy good defense that we saw either. And so now you couple the fact with that the offense has looked clunky all season long. And now this weather thing comes into play. I will say this. If this weather, I will say, even though it's not in my account right now, if this injury report goes at least halfway decent for me, I will take the 4.5 on the Dolphins for sure. Because I don't think a run out victory, given the conditions, given everything that's gone on. I know we think high flying offense because of Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and Tua throwing it all over the place. And those are the highlights and stuff. But this is actually a super highly, highly efficient rush offense as well for the Dolphins. And so if this comes down to a point where the wind didn't, I mean, the weather's so incredibly terrible, they cannot move the ball through the air. It's not like it's this massive disadvantage for the Dolphins. I think we think, like, oh, because Tyreek Hill and Tua and Waddle, that all they can do is pass the ball, but that's not the case. This is one of, this is a top five rushing efficiency offense over the course of the NFL season. So I am more on your side than I am on the other side with all of this. And if you are one of those guys that goes and looks at game logs, just remember that game they played, was in Germany. It was that really weird game. It was like where the Chiefs scored all 21 in the first half. One of them was a defensive score. Then the Dolphins only scored 14. All of that came in the third quarter. I would not take anything from that game. That was just like one of the weirdest games I watched all season long. So I think you just fresh handicap this one, which is, in my personal opinion, a very average Chiefs offense, a defense that has regressed. Not bad. I'm not saying they're bad, but they were one or two in every single category. Now they're more 15, 16 in all the categories over the second half of the season. And you're getting 4.5 points with a team that I think can run the ball pretty good on them.
That's Saturday night on Peacock, unless you're in Kansas City, Miami. I'm told if you have YouTube TV, you also get it, by the way. Forgive me for the tweeter who I didn't identify.
And that also just applies to the U.S. I know that much. So if you're in Canada or wherever else that you get regular NFL coverage, it's on your normal NFL channel.
How convenient.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Exactly.
I don't know if they even have the Peacock in other countries, you know? Like, it's, we don't know that.
Streaming services aren't worldwide? I would think so.
Always funnier when you throw the in front of it. All right, so Sunday morning, the Bills and the Steelers. Steelers, 10-point dogs. I took the points here. But this is the game where, you know, depending on what Doppler you're reading here, anywhere between 25-mile-per-hour winds to 40-mile-per-hour gusts is kind of akin to that Bills-Patriots game we remember from a few years back.
Yeah, I don't have anything in this one. I guess you would always lean towards taking 10 points in a game with a 35 total. I think the only thing that scares me off is just we look last week and we see like that game between the Jets and the Patriots, and it was a 17-3 game. And it's like they would have covered the 10 points, you know, in a game that was ugly and sloppy and disgusting, which was the only thing kind of in the back of my mind that kept me off of taking the points with the Steelers. If you do want to kind of look at just overarching stuff heading into this game, one of the weird things about the Bills since Brady took over as the offensive coordinator is he's just made this a much, much more run heavy and run focused team. And James Cook averaging nearly 17 carries per game. He's getting about 3.5 targets per game. All of those are very close. It's just extension of the run game type targets. So you're really looking at a guy who's getting about 20 attempts per game. Josh Allen over the last 2 weeks in these must win scenarios, he has 27 carries over the last 2 weeks as well. So I know it's a low total, but if we believe that the weather is going to be a factor, if we believe that this could really affect like one foregoing any sort of field goal attempts in that mid 40-ish range, and now you go for it and that isn't always going to equal points or whatever, or it at least extends these drives much, much, much longer. I think even at 35, I mean, like, it's probably an underplay for me when it's all said and done. I don't have a ton of conviction that either one of these teams is going to light up the scoreboard given the conditions and things that are going on. I think the Bills just want to run the ball. I think that that is something they just have decided that they want to be. That's their identity at this point. And, you know, you could easily see a scenario in which this is just the, you know, the Bills could be like, I mean, it's 10 points. So, I mean, could it be a scenario where it's 20-10 and, you know, and the Bills just run the clock out. They just have a 4-minute drive in which it just kills the rest of the game and stays under the 10, comes into play. Maybe, maybe not. So I would lean under in that one, even though it's not in the account quite yet.
How much more rich is this weekend though, with the two weather games? It's so awesome. It's what makes football so great this time of year. Let's go to the second game and we'll squeeze this one in. The Cowboys 7.5 now, seeing 7, right? 7-point favorites hosting the Green Bay Packers, down to the 7 here.
Yeah, I took it at the 7.5 on the Packers, and it is really wild because, you know, listen, you just have to do some stuff where you go in and you go, man, I was really, really wrong about that. And like the beginning of the season, I was just really, really wrong about Jordan Love. I thought that what we saw from him is, no matter how long the dude sat, he didn't absorb anything and wasn't going to be able to make it in the NFL. And then you go, and like we said, the season is kind of broken up into different parts. And so you go in, you start at week 10, which gives you the second half numbers for the season. Jordan Love was Pro Football Focus's third graded passer over the course of the second half of the season. If you go in and look at EPA plus CPOE composite, which is expected points added and completion percentage over expected, if you go in, Jordan Love, third in the NFL over the second half of the season in that statistic as well. He's literally been one of the top five quarterbacks in the NFL over
it's
the
amazing.
I thought he was toast. Like, I mean, seriously, like, I thought he was done. He's been really, really, really good. And then these like secondary receivers that have had to step in because Christian Watson has been injured, Bo Melton and Dontavian Wicks and all of that. Like, these dudes are running routes on like 70%+ of all the dropbacks. They're getting 20%+ target shares and they're converting and doing very, very well for them. I look at a game in which I expect both teams to be able to move the ball and score, because as good as that offense has been, the defense has been equally poor. And so it's not like the Cowboys aren't going to be able to score on them in this. But I kind of feel like this is one of those last team has the ball type scenarios where we're going to be figuring out who wins this game, because the Packers are going to be able to score. You look at the Cowboys defense and it's just average. It's not bad, but it's an average defense. It's somewhere sitting between 12 and 16 in any of the categories and stuff that you look at. And so I think on the other side of a touchdown is too much, and we might see it again because it is the Cowboys, and you know, they could get some money come kickoff.
You agree that if the Cowboys were to lose outright, McCarthy's gone and that Jerry Jones going to take a shot at Belichick?
Oh yeah.
I think it's done. Yeah. Boy oh boy, would that
he might
be
anyway even if they win.
Even if they win, that's right, still might be in play because they could lose next week. Two more games to get to. Matt's got a side play in both. That's next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all from Barcanada, the barrage here at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland, everybody.
Did you see the look Matt just gave me on the way out? It's because...
Yeah, what was that about?
It's because there's still these certain number of people in town that have no problem with the Caesars app whatsoever.
Oh, dude.
And then they look at me like I got two heads when I bring up having a problem of live betting or something that.
So this is how you can tell if somebody pre-flops or live bets, right? If someone does not have a problem with the Caesars app, you know they're not live betting.
Yeah, but like, me and him have talked about this before. Apparently, he doesn't get the whole refresh thing like all the rest of us do.
I tried to live bet a college basketball game last night, which I kid you not, rebooted three times on me. Three times. And also does this thing, too, because you get so frustrated with the reboot that then you're quick on the finger. So you end up hitting something that you're not supposed to, which delays the process anymore. It's right. Frustrating.
Absolutely. And you can't even, like, I've had to cross it off my list of live betting because you can't be wasting time live betting.
You can't.
When you're trying to get to a number. So basically only leaves us with Boyd and Stations in town where actually numbers are up.
It's infuriating. Still to come this hour. gentlemen who are not infuriating at all. Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke. And Chris Felica joins us now from Fox Sports. He is the Bear. You may know him as the Bear. He's the host of the Bear Bets Pod, which he did in a sling this week and has been since his shoulder surgery. He joins us now at the Bear Bets Pod headquarters there in Connecticut. It's Chris Felica, everybody. Bear Bets Pod, college and pro football versions all year. But of course, we want to talk pro with him here. And the Australian Open. How you doing, Chris?
So I'm not great, but at least I'm not infuriating. I will take that as a small win. So yeah, home. So no sling at home. I'm allowed to be out of the sling when I'm at home, and I'm glad because the sling is kind of screwing up my neck and shoulder on this side from like pulling some. Now my neck is killing me.
Can you give us a show and tell how high you can move that arm up?
Yeah. Am I getting to it? That's it.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Oh, yeah. That's the thing with shoulder surgery.
Man.
Yeah, my dad had
PT this morning, and when I was doing the pulleys, when you use the right arm to pull down and it brings your left arm up, she said I was getting up to like 110, which she said was pretty good for where I was at right now. And then when she was doing like the push outwards, and she's like, yeah, you're only getting to like 30 degrees there, so that wasn't as good. So, but the pain is gone. But she's like, it's good. A long, slow process.
Okay,
6 weeks. Like 6 weeks, you should be feeling a lot better.
I was gonna say you're young enough; you should get it back to full strength. All right, let's talk tennis first. I'm doing a podcast with Drew Ditzik after the show. I cannot wait for the tennis hardos out there. Australian Open starts, I guess, Pacific time. Late afternoon tomorrow, evening East Coast time tomorrow. So while we're watching football, basically, the Australian Open, tennis's first major of the year, will begin in Sydney, Australia. Excuse me, in Melbourne. Pardon me, Melbourne, Australia, or as Ron Flatter calls it, Melbourne, because he takes the Australian accent. And it's really strange. Let me just say, with tennis as opposed to golf, right? Golf, you get to play some golf for a few months, and then you start with a major right in April. Tennis is like, did you just pick up your racket? Good, major time. So it's a little odd, the Australian Open. Super fast, hard courts. What bets have you made, sir?
Well, I made a bet on Iga to win at least two slams this year. I found that was funny. That was up at DraftKings a few months ago, and I didn't play it at the time because you just want to make sure nothing happens in the run-up where she maybe she gets hurt in one of these run-up events and she misses Australia and misses an opportunity to win once up. And then it disappeared from DraftKings, so I was like disappointed. But the other day, I did find it at FanDuel at plus 170 for Iga to win two slams this year. So I'm pretty well invested in that. In terms of this tournament, I did play Iga to win her quarter. I think it was minus 125. I know it's a little difficult, but she should get through that. And if you can find like will the champion come from like top half of the draw or the bottom half of the draw? I think this is either Iga or Elena Rybakina. Rybakina just crushed Sabalenka in one of the warm-up events down there. And last year was kind of a lost year for Rybakina with some of her injuries and illnesses that she had. She's been playing great. So I think either Iga or Rybakina will wind up winning this thing. If you're looking for a little bit of a dark bro long shot quarter bet, I always gravitate towards on the women's side. Whatever quarter Maria Sakkari is one of the higher seeds in, and she is in quarter three, and Coco Gauff is also in her quarter. But I thought Beatriz Haddad-Maia at 16-1 to win that quarter, I thought that was worth a play. Someone who likes hard courts, she's a little bit of a spitfire, runs a little hot and lets emotions get the best of her from time to time. But if she's serving well, she certainly, I think, has the game, and she's in the top half. She's in Sakkari's like half of that quarter. So very easily you could find her playing Coco Gauff with a chance to get to the semifinal. So those were the things that I really gravitated towards for the Australian Open.
I like all that you say. I really do. And nothing on the men's side. Men's didn't inspire you in the same way.
You know what? It doesn't and it's funny. I was texting Chris Fowler, Brad Gilbert the other day before the draw came out. I said, I don't know why. And maybe it's this whole Djokovic, did he hurt his wrist last week? Did he not hurt it? But, and I you probably disagree with me. Maybe you don't. Do you get a sense that we might be in for maybe one of these Medvedev, Rune, Zverev, like Sinner? Like maybe this is the time.
Maybe
one of those guys kind of get through. Like I'm not necessarily sold Djokovic gets through and wins this one, even though he absolutely owns Rod Laver Arena and has won this slam more than any other one. But it would not surprise me if we saw what one of those young guns or someone pick up their first slam here.
A wrist is a wrist, I think, as my mother once said. No, a wrist injury can be serious, for sure. He's won 10 of these. I mean, you know, besides Rafa on clay, this is the greatest domination of any tournament by anyone ever. But yeah, I mean, listen, Jannik Sinner got a nice side of the draw, so that's a bet that I would absolutely co-sign on. And I do think, because you mentioned him, and I do think that Daniil Medvedev is kind of the guy that everyone's forgotten about. Yeah. Right. And so at 10-1, that's an interesting play as well. Now, I have not made any bets on the men's side. I didn't bet anything quarters on either the women's or men's side. I have Iga every which way and other kinds of things, including to win every set at 18-1. But I have her to win three slams. I have her to win this tournament. I have her paired with the Niners and Ravens and all kinds of different things, and with Novak. But there was no specific quarter bets that I liked. But yeah, I would absolutely agree with the notion that this is not an absolute that Novak gets this done. And then, of course, we didn't even mention Carlitos, who it would surprise no one if he won everything that he ever entered, right?
No. And get back to Medvedev, too. Like he loves the fast bite. I remember in Indian Wells, where he was complaining about how slow the court was. And the fact this is going to be light, this is right up his alley.
Yes, it is.
I mean, other than Djokovic, he can send the ball back better than anybody else on tour. So I think this is a prime condition for him. And it would, I mean, he's in Runa's quarters, right? Like, I mean, Runa is someone since Andre Agassi has gotten with him. And I think he's kind of grounded him a little bit and he's matured quite a bit. He's played very well lately too. So a Runa Medvedev quarterfinal would be very
juicy. Yeah. And even Tsitsipas, who I will never bet on, but he's had great success at this tournament as well. I can't get there either. Okay, we have a few minutes here. Your favorite super wild card weekend bets, sir, are?
I'm surprised that the Packers are down to 7. Like I thought the Cowboys might have taken money.
Me too.
I played Dallas at 7.5 early in the week, thinking this thing might go to 8 or 8.5. If it moved that way at all. But Green Bay took money, and that's interesting because I think if you look at who Green Bay has played the last few weeks of the year, the quarterbacks that they have played, and maybe they've held the Vikings quarterbacks down and Justin Fields and whomever else. But I don't know. This is a different story with Dallas's offense, all they can do, both running and throwing. And yeah, there is some pressure on Mike McCarthy, I think, to win this game and beat his former team. But I like Dallas here, and I like Tampa. I know Matt was laying out a pretty good case for the Eagles and documenting all of the injuries that Tampa has as well, and now big midfield turn. But I don't know. What if the Eagles just aren't good? Like, what if last year's Super Bowl run and all those games have just ultimately taken a toll on them, and they're just not the team that we expected them to be? Remember, I mean, they started 10-1, but remember, it was seemingly every single week
at the start of the year,
we were like, they won one, they got lucky there, they pulled another one out. Oh, they pulled another one out. Like, I mean, if they would have been 5-5 through their first 10 games, no one would have been surprised at all. So those were the two sides that I played. I did play a couple of playoff props, though. I played James Cook to have the most rushing yards wildcard weekend at 9-1, assuming he's going to get a lot of work this week, especially if the weather is bad. Now, of course, they'll be expecting him to run the ball, but so maybe I don't like it as much now with the really, really bad weather report. And I took a flyer on Mike Evans to have the most receiving yards at 18-1. This is something that Jeff Schwartz turned me on to yesterday on the pod. The Eagles defense certainly is terrible. If Baker is okay, Evans could have a big game. And then I played two involving the 49ers. I played the 49ers to win the NFC. I think it was plus 125. I got it at plus 110 a couple of weeks back, and I bought more at minus 125 because if they win their one playoff game to get to the NFC Championship game, they're going to be bigger than that. And if you want to buy out and guarantee a profit, you could. And I played Brock Purdy at plus 550 DraftKings to lead the playoffs in passing yards because, again, assuming they play the Eagles, a favorite scenario plays out, then you get another team, maybe Dallas, that you can throw the ball all over in the NFC Championship game. You get to the Super Bowl, who knows what happens. But I'm expecting three games out of Brock Purdy, and I'm expecting two huge ones in the NFC playoffs. So Purdy about 550 to have the most passing yards is another one that I played.
I like it. Niners and Ravens waiting, lurking for next week, waiting for the divisional round. Chris, appreciate it. Hope your shoulder gets better, man. Enjoy everything. Tennis and football, man.
We will. Absolutely. Have a great weekend, guys.
You too. Chris Felica at Chris Felica, F-A-L-L-I-C-A, host of the Bear Bets Pod over there at Fox Sports, which our buddy Will Hill is part of as well. We'll come back. Kelly and I will give our NFL picks of the weekend and a PSA for the entire postseason next.